Hi everybody. We'll get the volume right eventually. Can you hear me at the back? Can you hear me down the road? Thanks for coming along tonight. The topic for tonight is the first, which is coming out of this book which we're following for the next 6 weeks, which is The Reason for God by Tim Keller. And if you like reading books, then that's a good book to read. And the one that that I've been chosen to pick up on is that just surely there can't be just one true religion. That's our topic for tonight. Surely there can't be just one true religion in the kind of whole realm of human experience of religion. How come we're saying there's just one that's right, if we're saying that? So it's a question that people ask, and it's something that actually, if you're a Christian, I'm not assuming that you are, but if you're a Christian, it's a little bit hard to defend, because it seems like a severe lack of humility going on there to say, I'm right and all the others are wrong. So I want to dive into this topic. And just by way of kind of wider introduction, Tim Keller, who writes this book, he talks about two things just in his introduction. He says that the world seems to be becoming more and more secular on the one hand, and on the other hand, more and more religious. And there's these two directions of travel that seem to be going on. In the West, particularly in the UK here, it's very much more towards the secular. It can be very secular. Christianity, the kind of religion of centuries, is being squeezed out. We don't do God, as it were. But in lots of other places, you know, Middle East and etc., people are becoming very religious. And humanity is congenitally religious, it seems, that people default to believing in God, unless you happen to live in the Western world, in which case maybe something else is going on. But there's these two directions of travel, and the problem is that when they meet in conversation over coffee, as it were, you end up with a kind of fire, you know, throwing grenades at each other. And he's inviting us, and I'm inviting us, as Christians, if you're Christians, or as atheists, if you're atheists, or agnostics, if you're agnostics, to actually look in a little bit more detail at what may be some of your doubts, and to focus on them, and to kind of engage with them a little bit more. So, for example, if you're a Christian, just, you know, look at some of those difficult areas, and we're doing that over these weeks. Look at some of those difficult areas. Why is there so much suffering in the world? Get an answer for that one. What about unanswered prayer? You know, what's going on there? And there are issues that actually, if we're honest, behind the kind of Christianese and the Christian facades, there's stuff that's going on that makes us think, I've got some areas of doubt. And we need to look at those honestly and engage with them. Likewise, for the secularists or the atheists, they have areas of doubt too. Are you really saying that chance is actually what has produced everything that we touch and see? That this process of chance has actually created galaxies, has created cell reproducing cells, etc. Are you really sure about that? Are you really sure that there is no God, that there is no kind of designer behind all this? Check out your doubts. And, you know, for each of us, as it were, to have a little bit of humility about what may be some of the areas of our doubts. And then when we engage with people, just to be gracious, be kind, don't throw grenades at each other, listen, talk, understand. So that's by the way of a kind of wider introduction. But just to kind of put a bit of heat into it, here's a couple of quotes from people who are irritated by, let's say, the Christians who say there is only one way to God. And one guy says, how could there be just one true faith? It's arrogant to say your religion is superior and try to convert everyone else to it. Surely all the religions are equally good and valid for meeting the needs of their particular followers. Well said. Here's another one. Religious exclusivity is not just narrow, it's dangerous. Religion has led to untold strife, division, and conflict. It may be the greatest enemy of peace in the world. If Christians continue to insist that they have the truth, and if other religions do this as well, the world will never know peace. Good comment. Well made. So, in essence, they're stating the issue. As Christians, by the way, Christians aren't the only ones who think they have the way. There are lots of others too. But if you're a Christian, then we have to kind of defend this, as it were. And, you know, we just, you know, is it arrogant? Is it really arrogant to say, we've got it and everybody else hasn't? And what lies behind that? So, some time ago, in Newcastle, there was a gathering of 53,000 people. And this was the annual Geordies Are Not Stupid convention. And Alan Shearer was there, and 53,000 people crammed into St. James Park, and he said, I need a volunteer. And eventually a volunteer came down from one of the top rows, waded his way to the front, and it was Gaza. And he goes up to the mic, and Alan Shearer says, now we just need to demonstrate, you know, the world's press are here, it's being filmed, it's being live streamed all over the world. We just need to ask you a few simple questions to demonstrate that Geordies aren't stupid. And so the first question then is to Gaza, what is 50 plus 35? And he thought for a good while about that, and he said, 98. The crowd groaned, he'd got it wrong, and but the crowd said, give him another chance! Give him another chance! So Shearer said, okay, we'll give you another one. And he said, what is 35 plus 15? And Gaza thought for a long time about this. And then he eventually answered, 52. The crowd groaned. But they shouted, give him another chance! Give him another chance! So Shearer said, he just kind of realized that the importance of the whole moment in the world's eyes. He said, okay, we'll give you one more chance. Guys, that what is 2 plus 2? And he thought for an embarrassingly long time, and he eventually said, 4. And pandemonium broke out. The crowd started stamping their feet and shouting, give him another chance! Give him another chance! Now, 2 plus 2 actually does equal 4. There may be some people here who think that 2 plus 2 equals 4.5. There might be some people here who think it's 3. There might be some people here who think, well, everybody needs to make their own mind up about that. And everyone needs to have their own truth about 2 plus 2 equals 4. But actually, that's what we're talking about tonight. Is truth, as it were, something which is objective, external to what we actually believe? And when we believe what is true, i.e. 2 plus 2 equals 4, then we're aligning our beliefs with the truth. And if we believe something else, then we're aligning ourselves with our beliefs with something which is false. But what I want to argue is that to say that there is truth, that is not dependent on surveys and public opinion and 53,000 people shouting, giving them another chance. It is not dependent on the number of people that believe it or how persuasive it seems that the truth is external. And to believe the truth of something like that, you're simply aligning your opinions with what is the truth. Was Gaza arrogant to think that 2 plus 2 equals 4? I have a kind of certain way that I'm going to be going with this. And but that is the issue. So, but there are many, many religions. There's loads and loads of religions. So, you know, how come we're going with this one? Can we show the first clip? I've got a couple of clips to show, and these are taken from an excellent DVD series where...
How do you see the different religions in the world? Well, a lot of people are confused because it looks as if there's 1,001 religions. How on earth can you choose? But a simple way of looking at it is to see there are three great families of faiths. Families in the sense that some faiths have a common family resemblance because they all believe in the same ultimate source of reality. You see it that way, there's the Eastern families, the first, Hinduism, Buddhism, and the New Age movements, and they all believe in an impersonal ground of being. So God maybe to Hindus, but with a small g. The second family is the secularist, atheists, agnostics, naturalists in science, materialists in philosophy, and they all believe that everything goes back to chance. And the third great family of faiths is the Abrahamic. which of course is the Jewish faith, the Christian faith, and those two shape the West. And now we've got the Muslim faith. They all go back to the notion of a personal, infinite God, and everything flows from that. It's only in the Jewish and Christian understanding that humans are made in the image of God, so they have a precious dignity that can't be alienated. So you see, the differences are extreme, and the differences make a difference, and people have to choose carefully.
Which is interesting. How do you say the religions of the world?
Well, a lot of people are confused, because it looks as if there are thousands and one religions. How on earth can you choose? But a simple way of looking at it is to see there are three great families of faiths. Families in the sense that some faiths have a constant.
We got it. Clearly you weren't listening the first time and you needed to see it the second time round. I was about to say that this is taken from a DVD series which I found very helpful called Towards Belief. And the guy who was doing the interviewing there has he's kind of gone and researched and interviewed people, just kind of real brain boxes. And the guy who was being interviewed there is a real brain box. He's Os Guinness. And people with degrees, the length of their arms and so on. And it's just a fascinating series. So I found that a helpful explanation of the kind of broad strokes of so many religions, three great families of religions, as it were. And the kind of question that is so often put to Christians is that, you know, the arrogance question, the lack of humility question, why, you know, that's put to Christians, how come you're saying you're right? So I'd like to show another little clip now, perhaps just once, and...
Christians believe in an exclusive faith there. How do we hold to that in a kind of multicultural, pluralistic world?
Virtually every believer in any faith believes that what they believe is true. Atheists are far fewer than Christians. A tiny minority, they believe they're right and everyone else is wrong. It is not unique to the Christian faith. I would start by saying there are many different faiths. Those differences make a great difference. So one only needs to look at them practically, but then to say, taking the difference seriously, which one is true? They can't all be right, because they all say different things and they lead in very different directions.
I can remember talking with someone as a university student, and they basically said, I can't be exclusive. And it reminded me suddenly, again, about a week after I became a Christian disciple, I actually met one of the leaders of the Baha'i faith. And he said to me, you know, he was asking me about my newfound faith as a Christian, and at the end he said, that's wonderful, I'm so happy for you, I'm a Baha'i, and I didn't know what the Baha'i were at all. So I said, well, what's a Baha'i? So he explained that to me, and then he ended up by saying, we accept everybody. And I said, okay, what about someone who says there's only one way to God? Would you accept that? He said, no, we couldn't accept that. I said, so you're rejecting that, you're saying that's wrong. And he said, no, we want to include everything and everyone. And I said, well, could you include the one who says there's only one way? And he said, no, we couldn't possibly do that. I said, well, you're excluding me again. And I that sort of flashed into my mind. I can remember talking with the student and just saying to him, look, if you say that there's one way to God, you're saying that those who think that there are some ways to God or all paths lead to God are wrong. Now, if you say, look, some paths lead to God, because you're not sure that Hitler, for example, has such a great path to God, and so you're thinking you don't want to follow that one. So if you say, look, some paths lead to God, you're saying those who believe all paths lead to God or only one path lead to God are wrong. And it was interesting just to see, it's not an argument as such, all you're trying to do is just try to take someone to the point of their own conviction. And I think most people can identify that, because they say, actually, no, there are some things I think are wrong.
When we say the Christian faith or world religions, the giant ones are exclusive, but if we just got rid of them, there would be world peace. Really, you're missing the point that every single major world religion, even atheism, the lack of religion, is exclusive. If you are an atheist, if you are a new naturalist, then you're excluding those that have faith. If you are a universalist and say all roads lead the same way, then you're excluding those who believe they have a way to God, whether it's a Muslim person, a Jewish person, or a Christian person.
Christians believe in an exclusive faith. How do we hold to that in a kind of multicultural, pluralistic world?
Virtually every believer...
So interesting comments from these people. I'm hoping this is going to work, but I want to just try and illustrate something. The issue that Michael Ramsden was saying there about different views. For this little piece of my talk, I need 4 volunteers. 1, 2, 3, 4. Don't worry, you don't have to say anything, you don't have to do anything, but I need you to come and stand up here if you would. And just stand in line if you would. I'm going to give you, as it were, roles. I'm basically just illustrating what Michael Ramsden was saying. So what we have here is the person who actually believes that all religions lead to God, that they're all going up the mountain, they're just different paths, all going up different ways, but they're all going to go to the same place. So that's you. And you're the person that actually is a little bit more discerning, and you think that actually there's an awful lot of good in lots of religions, but there are some, like the ones that do child sacrifice and things like that, you want to exclude those. So you're saying that some religions lead to God, but some don't. Okay, that's where you are. And actually, you're just a really nice Christian. And you actually believe there's only one way to God. But you could also be a Muslim, because they believe that, and or a Jew, too. But actually, for the purposes of tonight, you can be a nice Christian. Okay. And actually, you're just kind of smugly standing there, because you're an atheist, and you think they're all wrong, because there isn't even a God. So they're the different roles. You see that? Now, this person here, who believes that there are some ways to God, and there are some ways that aren't to God, you actually disagree with people who think there's only one way. Sorry, don't look puzzled, dear. Because you're saying she's saying there's only one way. You're saying actually there's lots of ways, but not every way. And actually, you disagree with Rachel, because actually Rachel thinks that they're all going that same way. As it were. Yes, I like the motion there, actually. So although you're a very inclusive and very humble person and a very nice person, you actually disagree with this person and this person and this person. So very nice and very humble, but actually you disagree philosophically with these people, so you make a distinction. Now, same with you, sorry. You're a very nice person, but actually you disagree with Claire because she's making a distinction. So there's a disagreement there. You disagree, like the bit with Michael Ramsden and the Baha'i person, with the person that says there's only one way to God. You're actually saying, no, you're wrong. Actually, there's all ways leading to God. And you certainly disagree with the atheist or the secularist over here, because actually you're saying there is a God, and she's saying that there isn't. So again, the person who's very, very inclusive and a very nice person and a very humble person actually is disagreeing with this person and this person and this person. So now the same here, actually. You're a very nice person. I have to say that. And there are some great atheists and some great secularists and so on. But actually, you think they're all wrong. So you're disagreeing. So the atheist is actually very exclusive as well. And I'm sorry, you are a nice person, but you're very exclusive. And you're disagreeing with this person and this person and this person. So my question is, why is it that it's just this person that gets all the aggro? Why is it that it's the Christians, and sometimes some of the others, that are accused of arrogance and lack of humility simply because they've chosen to believe what they've chosen to believe? So there's an inconsistency there. So every one of them, every one of these different attitudes right across the spectrum are exclusive in one way or another. And they may all be lovely people, but actually there is an issue of humility that could be accused at each one of these. You may now sit down, you lovely people. Thank you. So do you see my point there, that it is an issue that, you know, just it's not just the Christians who believe there's one way that are being exclusive. All the other views are being exclusive in one way or another. So the people that asked those questions right at the start and said, how come, you know, you're so arrogant to believe what you believe, that can be leveled at every one of these different points of view. So maybe the issue is not so much the fact that there are different views that are exclusive, maybe the issue is more our manner and how we handle these things. What are our attitudes? How do we handle people of different persuasions when it comes to religion or anything for that matter? But how do we get on with people who we know are, you know, diametrically opposed to us in what they think? What's our attitude? How do we cope with them? So, right, 2 minutes discussion in threes, fours at the most, around the tables. How do you get on with people that you disagree with? Just for a moment, are there any things from those little discussion groups that you just would love to say, this is how you handle it, or this is what we should do, or whatever? Just shout it out.
Respect.
Respect, yeah.
Tolerate.
What was that?
Tolerate.
Yep. Tolerate. What was that? Compromise, yeah. Although it's kind of worth asking about that, compromise. How much can you compromise and so on, yeah. Any more? Pray for people. Great. That's kind of coming around the back, really, isn't it? But that's very good. Yeah. Any more? Yes, sorry.
I think you've got to love people and be aware of where they're coming from.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge thing I've learned.
Yeah.
Where they are and being from.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of incumbent on us to listen and to really find out where people are. So often, I've had lots of conversations with people who are arguing a particular angle on something, and the reason why they're arguing that particular angle intellectually or whatever is not because they're intellectually persuaded about something, but something happened to them 10 years ago that has really offended them, and they're bothered by that, and that's why they've chosen this particular route. So listening to people is really important. It's a fraught area, this. It's kind of in the public area, and it happens with conversations which we have with people that have a different point of view. But listening is so good. I overheard in church this morning a sweet lady who was praying, and she said, "Dear Lord, the past couple of years have been very tough for me. You've taken my favorite actor, James Garner, my favorite actress, Lauren Bacall, my favorite comedian, Robin Williams, my favorite singer, Joe Cocker, and finally my favorite author, Tom Clancy. I just want you to know, Lord, that my favorite politicians are Jeremy Corbyn, David Cameron, and that woman from Scotland." Attitude. Attitude is so crucial in this whole thing. And it was Jesus, wasn't it, who said to love our neighbor. Actually, it was Moses. Jesus reiterated that. And he went further. He said to love your enemies, to pray for your enemies. So, therefore, if we have any desire to follow what Jesus is saying, then this comment which we've been making just now about loving people, actually, loving, listening to people, whatever, listening to people who you find, it's easy when they're your friends and it's all going well, but listening to people who you find slightly irritating, listening to people who you find a bit of a bore, listening to people who you disagree with, listening to people who you know are totally opposed to what you think, and loving them is actually what Jesus says, and that is the way as Christians we should be handling this kind of intellectual debate in terms of attitude and religion. And it's probably our attitudes as Christians that will make a greater difference than our smart answers. What Jesus does in people's lives is also the most amazing thing that transforms life. So often people, in the popular press, as it were, people think that if you go to church, the church is responsible for so many issues. In fact, this is one of our later subjects, but you stay away from that, stay away from that. But actually, what the church does across the UK is incredible in terms of care for people, social outreach, looking after people and so on. Statistically, the church is the greatest deliverer of social care in the UK. And I know what happened in some people's lives, people who, this isn't just kind of distant friends, but four people who are in my close association became Christians, and one of them, because of his Christian faith, ended up being concerned about people who were homeless in Edinburgh, and he started Bethany Christian Trust, which is now a multi-million pound outreach to people with addictions. You probably know a lot about Bethany Trust, but that's Alan, and that's because of his Christian faith he's doing that. Another friend, actually somebody I shared a flat with at university, he was also by the name of Alan, he became a doctor, and very capable as a doctor, and he, because of his Christian faith, because of Jesus' work in his life, he ended up spending 20 or more years in Tanzania as an eye doctor. And again, just sacrificial living because of his Christian faith. Another person who, again, because of his Christian faith, is now involved in an outfit which is literally helping thousands of kids off the streets in Uganda and Ethiopia and other places. Another person that I know, because of her Christian faith, is actually serving some of the most impoverished communities, fishing communities on the Sesi Islands in Uganda. Sorry, Kathleen, but you got the mention. But it's because of Christian faith, because of what Jesus does in people's lives, that people are propelled into this kind of care. So when people say that religion's a bad thing, religion is divisive, I want to say, I want to introduce you to some of my friends. And this is what they've done as a result of coming to know Christ. At stake, just coming kind of right back into the issue. I'm going to read just a few verses from John's Gospel. And this contains the verse which is either the greatest comfort or the greatest irritation, whichever way you want it. But it's a conversation that Jesus had with some of his disciples shortly before he died. And Thomas, the great doubter, said to Jesus, said, Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way? And Jesus answered, I'm the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. That's the kind of proof text in all of this. But it's one verse out of many that indicate the uniqueness of Christ. So, is that true? Or is it false? When Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, no one comes to the Father except through me, is that true? Or is it false? And if we happen to believe it's true, and it is true, then it's not arrogant. It's actually just like Gaza getting the 2+2 correct. We're aligning our opinions with what is true. Of course, if it's false, then you've just wasted the best part of a good Sunday evening listening to all this. If it's false, you know, we just let's sweep it all away and live life without any reference to this. But if it's true, we have to engage with this. And Jesus goes on to say, in fact, Philip jumps in and he says, Lord, show us the Father and that'll be enough for us. He's saying, okay, show us God. You know, we've been with you 3 years. Now just show us the ultimate. Show us the Father. And Jesus says, don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been with you among such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. So Jesus is saying, get this, Jesus is saying that I am the manifestation of the Creator God in human form. I am the visible expression of the invisible God. If that's true, we have to get hold of it. If it's false, let's ignore it. But we cannot just merely treat this as something as kind of one way, or, you know, that's good for you, or that, you know, if that helps you, then believe it. We have to, if it's true, we have to align our lives up with this. This is life-changing. This affects the way we think, the way we behave, the way we relate to people, our view of the future, our view of our money, our view of our marriage. This affects everything about life, if this is true. If it's false, then let's ignore it. And the whole issue of truth is, it's not just because we believe it that it becomes true. It's true there, whether or not we believe it. It's true, there's a candle burning behind me, whether or not I'm looking at it or not. It is still there. So again, about Jesus, if this is true, then he's there and he's available to be known. If it's false, then you can jump in and choose whatever religion you like, pick a mix, or you can choose none. But if it's true, let's get hold of this. I have finished. And you have listened well. Thank you.